right, good evening. Welcome back to Surprise Arizona. My name is Josh Bernier, Royals insider for 96.5 The Fan. Yeah, welcome back to the Valley of the Sun. That's what they call it. Currently it's pouring, and it's about 20 degrees cooler than it is back in Kansas City. So live it up, Casey. Royals did just that earlier this afternoon. Actually, they've done it now twice in the past 24 hours. A second straight day, the boys mount an impressive comeback, scoring four runs in the ninth inning. Today, they beat the Padres. They did the same thing to the Seattle Mariners out in Peoria just 24 hours ago. And I know that wasn't the headline from yesterday's game. Bobby Witt Jr. wearing that 96-mile-per-hour heater on the left forearm that dominated not only headlines in Kansas City, but throughout the baseball world. Thankfully, outside of some soreness, it sure does seem as if a catastrophe was averted with the great number 7. Coming up, I'll talk with number 73, Royals lefty reliever Sam Long. But first, pleased to be joined by the undeniable one, Royals first baseman Vinny Pasquantino, who did not play in today's victory, but he did yesterday. And Vinny, I'm always watching, obviously the game, but I keep a trained eye on that dugout. Always like watching how the guys are interacting with one another, how you're interacting with the manager. Did I see you tell Q, manager Mac Quatrero, did I see you tell Q to lay down a bunt in the game yesterday?
That's a joke, yeah. It was first and second. And so I was like, hey, put the bunt on. Like, let's get the guy over. I forgot who was hitting at the time.
I think it was Biggio.
It was Biggio, yeah. That's right. Because he came in the dugout, and I was like, hey, man, like, we get him over here. It doesn't matter if it's for training. But it was more as a joke. Q does what he's got to do, you know.
What's that relationship like, you and Q?
I think it's, like, there's a lot of banter. We knew each other a little bit before he got here, and we have the connection of Old Dominion. So we met for the first time, actually, in 2019, in January. Him and Ryan Yarbrough spoke at the Old Dominion baseball banquet. So I met him and Yarbrough there. And then in 22, when I got called up, I met him in Tampa. We took a picture together at the Trop to send back to the guys at Old Dominion. And then at the end of 22, we'd already made the decision to move on from Matheny. We all knew about it. And we were still, I stayed in Cleveland at the end of like our last day of the season. Mm-hmm. Like the team flew home, but some guys stayed in Cleveland because we were going to fly directly home, like to home the next morning. And Tampa was playing Cleveland in the first round of the playoffs. So they were getting in. So I saw all their bags, so I texted Q and was like, hey, like, see, you guys got in. How's everything going? Because I at that point, I knew we were going to interview him for the job. So I was like, hey, I'm pulling for you. So we had that little, like, not a real relationship, but just like a knew each other. And then he got the job, and I think we have a really good, solid relationship, very open and honest conversations with each other about what we're feeling, and I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. Seems like he's sneaky, funny.
Very, very sneaky, funny, yeah.
Like, what other words would you use to describe him?
Dry. It would definitely be like very dry. But that's when the humor will get you. Like the humor sneaks up on you. Where you're like, wait, was that a joke?
Right.
that was like the first year when I had him as manager. That was like the thing that was like, wait a minute, he's being funny. Like, okay, that's cool. And then now I feel like it's like a well-oiled machine with the guys who have been here with him the whole time. So, yeah, very funny. Gets intense when he needs to. Very serious. Like takes the job very seriously as he should. Very communicative. Lets us know how he's feeling, what his thoughts are, and where we're at right now, what he needs from us as players. So I think he does a really nice job.
At least to us in the media, he tries to act as if, you know, my feet are up, I'm just hanging out. But he has he's one of 32 people on the planet with a very coveted job. Mm-hmm. To me, he's sly like a fox. He's, you know, smart like a fox. Whatever the like a fox saying is, that's what he is to me.
One of the interesting things about him is like, I think I found this out through an interview he did or something, but like he's got kind of a team. It's one of the things he asked for when he got the job. Was like, I want a team of analysts to help me.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to blindly make lineups without any reasoning behind them or pitching decisions, whatever. So I know they meet after every game, which I think is really cool because it means that we're paying attention to that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think he does a great job of blending old school with new school, using new information with like old school thoughts too, but not in spring training games. He's not button guys. It's
right,
crazy.
Right,
you know,
right.
We're trying to score runs here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And pulled it out.
Uh-huh.
Boys got it done in the ninth.
Yeah. Obviously we had some other stuff going on that happened in the game yesterday, but I found out we won later in the night, and I was like, oh, we won. Like, that's cool.
So, can't kill them. Can't kill those Royals.
Well, we always kind of joke, like, the guys who come in the game in the back half are really freaking good. So our job as the starters is just give them a shot at the end of the game. Just give them a shot to go win the ball game. We try to set the tone a little bit. You keep it close. Just keep it close. We don't need to be winning. We know those guys are going to pull it out.
Vinny Pasquantino, kind enough to join us here on 96.5 The Fan. Where would you say your edge comes from?
I don't think it really comes from anywhere. I think it's just kind of how I grew up. So that's probably, you know, that's where it comes from. Is I had an older brother. I was a younger brother, so always competitive there. Yeah, playing one-on-one basketball with my dad, he never let me win. Like, I still remember the first time I beat him in a game of basketball. I think I was like 16. So that was cool. I remember he can't beat me now.
How did it end? Because I have the same story. My dad pushed me in the back as I drove by him, and he's never played me again.
Yeah, I was going to my left, and it was like kind of like a fadeaway layup. I got it over his head somehow, and it went in, and I haven't stopped talking about it. So, yeah, I still remember that. So that's probably where it came from. It's just like hitting's not personal, but like making it personal with you can't beat me. You're going to sometimes, but like in my mind, you can't. Mm-hmm. So like I don't know if I look at it a little differently, but like I take a lot of pride in like you can't strike me out. Like you might get me out, but I'm going to make it tough on you. So that's just kind of where the mindset comes from. It's just I just don't want to give away any free outs. Yeah, I try to be smart about it, but I'm petty. Like, I don't want you to beat me. So I try to do the job that I can. Like, my job is to go do the job, mm-hmm. whatever that may be. So I take a lot of pride in that.
My favorite quote, the one that I use a lot that you've said in the past, you were being interviewed by Steve Stewart, and you said, you know, I'm aware of my body language. I'm always stepping the box, trying to portray confidence, and if I'm not confident, I fake it. Mm. Love that. Who has caught your eye, whether it's a teammate, an opponent, that does a good job of always presenting confidence, even if they're 0 for 20 coming into the game?
This is like a kind of a random answer for like a Kansas City answer, but Cal Raleigh with Seattle, and I played it yesterday, so that's probably why it's on my mind.
The big dumper for those at home.
Yeah. Like, I think he's one of the best hitters in baseball. I played against him in the minor leagues, like on the backfield and stuff. So I've seen him like do some incredible things. We talk about hitting quite a bit, just like when he gets on first and stuff. He's always upset about how he's hitting. And I'm always like, dude, you're breaking. So he's probably like, I don't know. I watch that a lot of like, can you tell if a guy is, if he's struggling or not? You know, like within the clubhouse, like, can you tell? So I always try to be the guy that like, I don't want you to know. You know, every once in a while it's going to happen. You just get angry or you just get upset. But I try to be the guy that, like, I don't want any of my teammates to know how I'm hitting based off of how I'm acting. I don't. Mm-hmm. I look at myself as a leader on this team, and if I'm going to be a leader, I need to be publicly facing of, like, hey, we're ready to go at all times.
Now, you've always had the ability to tap into the fan, you know, the Jets fan, the baseball fan. You understand what they're thinking, even though I think most guys do. You're willing to acknowledge, hey, I'm a fan, too. I've booed people in the past. Has that ever been an issue to where, like, you're too in touch with what goofballs like me or people on social media would be saying?
I think when I was younger, like, my first month in the big leagues, I was miserable. My wife wasn't out here, like, in Kansas City yet. I was living at the Residence Inn over by the airport, and I was just by myself. I felt like I was hitting the ball pretty good, but I couldn't get any hits. And, like, I would just go online, and it was just getting ripped. And it was my first real experience of, like, kind of getting ripped like that. Of, like, oh, this guy's not that good. Called him up too early. Like, I think Carlos Santana was traded. And then it was like, why did we ever do that? Like, this guy stinks. Send him back down, whatever. Like, I remember there was one at-bat, like, specifically. I think it was against Michael Pineda. My first at-bat of the day. I actually hit a home run my next at-bat. But he struck me out on a fastball, like a borderline fastball, full count. And I remember I struck out looking. And I was walking back to the dugout, like, that's it. Like, I'm going to get sent down. Like, that's the last straw. There was a game in Cleveland, or it was at home, but against Cleveland, I was 0-for-3, and then they brought Sam Hintages into the game, and they kept me in, and I hit a double off the wall. It was almost a walk-off homer, but it ended up being a double, and we ended up winning. And I remember going into the manager's office, into Matheny's office, be like, thank you for the, like, faith in me. Because I was just kind of shaken my first month. Like, it was just a tough month. Called home a lot. Just like, I'm miserable. I don't know why. Like, I have everything I want, and I'm miserable, which is a terrible attitude to have. So I think that's kind of when I developed, like, understand that I was a fan at one point. And these people don't hate me. They hate what I'm doing. Like, it's not personal. At least I hope it's not personal. But it's just one of those things for me where I just try to give it my all every time I go out there, and that's all I can do. Just be prepared, go try to have good at-bats, go do what I can, and try to make plays. The first base stuff kind of bothers me a little bit. When I was getting called up, like, I got pigeonholed as a DH, like, publicly a lot, which really bothered me because I don't feel like that's who I am. But people are going to have their own perceptions, and I can't control that. So what I can't control is the work that I put in. So I put a lot of work into – and it, to be honest, some of that I thought was the way I looked. I was a little bit bigger when I got called up. I'm technically the same weight, but I've shifted it around a little bit. I've gotten smarter about how I work out, and I think I just look a little bit better now, and that helps. Like, perception is everything. Growing up, I was always told, like, it doesn't matter if it was a strike or not, what did it look like?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't matter if you were out or not, what did it look like? Did he look safe? Did he look out? So I've worked hard on that, just trying to, like, clean some things up. Just, I don't want to regret anything. So I'm trying to do everything I can to give it my all.
And you're more confident now. I mean, the work, I mean, anyone that's there early sees the work that you put in at first base. I would imagine, even if people want to knock you now.
Yeah.
Man, I know I'm putting the work in.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the thing. Like, I think when I first got called up, it felt like every play was do or die at first, where it's like, all right, if I get hit a ball, I have to make this play. Or if the guy throws one in the dirt, I have to make this play. And it just got to a point where it was like, I can't put that stress on myself. I just got to go try to do my best. And if my best isn't good enough, I'm okay with that. But it's not going to be without lack of trying. Mm-hmm. So as long as I give it everything I got, if it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, I've thought about that quite a bit. It's like, do I feel any different after I hit a home run versus when I get out? Not really. Like, when I go home at night, when I'm with my wife and my dog, like, I feel the same. So maybe my dopamine is a little bit better when I hit a home run.
Sure.
But like, at the end of the day, like, I am who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I feel pretty convicted with that. So yeah. Regardless of success or not, I know I'm doing everything I can to do it.
He is the undeniable Vinny Pasquantino, kind enough to join us here on 96.5 The Fan. For those also might know, Vinny is our VinFL insider throughout the offseason on Cody and Gold. Coming up, where does the chip on Vinny's shoulder come from, and how last season's run into October could impact this upcoming season, which is suddenly just 2 weeks away. More with Vinny Pasquantino after this. And welcome back to Rainy Surprise. Royals victorious earlier this afternoon. Daniel Lynch and Lucas Ursek, John Schreiber, all with solid performances on the mound. Luke Bailey with a solid all-around game. The Royals, a third-string catcher, likely to start the season in Omaha. A guy that last year started the season in Omaha and then pitched some huge innings. Reliever Sam Long will join us coming up in just about 20 minutes from now. But continuing our conversation with Royals first baseman Vinny Pasquantino, who, you know, earlier this week, talking about him with Cody and Gold, in my mind, he's the best first baseman in the division, the best left-handed hitter in the division, with all due respect to the switch-hitting Jose Ramirez. Just a strictly left-handed hitter. Now, Riley Green in Detroit's impressive, but give me the undeniable Vinny Pasquantino. Now, I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, the beating you took mentally in your first month of Big League Baseball. Going through that experience, does it make it easier to
diagnose when someone else is going through that? Like, when
I think it's easier after going through it. Like, so the first 10 days last season, I sucked. Like, I was probably one of the worst players in the game. There was a lot of tears shed at the beginning of last year because I was coming off a shoulder injury. Right before I got hurt, I went into like a 2-week slump. So it felt like I hadn't been a good player in like a year. So like, me going through that helps me see other people if they're going through something similar. The problem is like, nobody else can really help you with it. It's the same with injuries. Like, what do you say to a guy who just found out his season's over? Because I've been told that multiple times. Like, there's nothing you can say to me that makes me feel better because it sucks. So like, it's not appreciated, but mm-hmm. I'm just saying that like, sometimes you just need some time to yourself to be like, okay, look in the mirror. Am I doing everything I can? And then that's where I think as teammates you come up and you're like, hey man, like, getting everything in, you know, just trying to just like kind of check-ins. Just like, hey, you look great. Swing, feel, you just try to instill confidence in people, because when they have confidence in themselves, that's when they take off.
Yeah.
That's when great things start to happen. Like, I think you could probably see it with our team last year. We were a little unsure about ourselves through the first half of the year. I think we went into the All-Star break and I think we had been bumped out of playoff contention. Like, We had just played Boston, and I think we beat them Friday night, but then they beat us Saturday, Sunday, and I believe that knocked us back.
Yep.
And like that's where I credit our veterans last year. They were like, guys, it doesn't matter. Believe in what this team's got. And I think we hit a nice groove there in August where it was like, all right, we're doing this. We're really good. So let's go believe it and play together and go do this thing.
Yeah.
And we were able to. So
131 games last year. Impress everyone with your work ethic and commitment to get back for the boys and yourself to make that run in October. And I remember going into last year, you knew exactly how many games you had played in 23 and 24, and you wanted to be out there every game. I mean, 131's a big number, especially when you're in the postseason as well. Did you prove anything to yourself, or is that chip still in your on your shoulder because, you know, you had a fluky thumb injury?
Yeah, like, I think if the thumb injury happened, like, maybe not the specific thumb injury, because I don't think the timing would have been the same if it was at a different point of the year, but, like, I think 131 is a good amount of games if an injury, like, pops up in the middle of the season. It's like, oh, I had a calf
right.
2 weeks or something. And then it's like, oh, whatever. But it stings a little bit more when it's, like, at the end and you're pushing and it's like, oh, you're out. You're done. Yeah, but I think I always am able to carry a chip on my shoulder, just kind of the way my career has gone. I'll always know that I went in the 11th round. Like, I'll always know that I was the 319th pick or whatever. Do I know the names of all 318 in front of me? No, I don't care. But,
good.
Like,
it'd be a lot.
I think that's also ridiculous. Like, there's a lot of people who were drafted ahead of me that, like, wishes they were in the spot that I was in right now. So I'm not going to take that for granted either. Like, once you get drafted, you got to go do it. So, but I do know that 30 teams passed on me 10 times, and Baltimore passed on me 11 times. So I do know that. Yeah, I can always put COVID, didn't get invited to anything during COVID until the end of it, where, like, everybody kind of got invited to instructs and stuff. So I wasn't treated horribly by any means. It's not what I'm saying. But sure. I have these, like, easy chips that I can put on and be like, nobody believed in me. Nobody did this. The problem is, like, I don't care if anybody believes in me or not because I believe in myself.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I carry a chip just because it's like I feel like I can be an impact player in this league and I just want to go do it. So when I go to sleep at night, like, it's really all I think about. I think about my wife, my dog, my family. But then I think about, like, how can I go be an awesome player in the major leagues, because that's all I want.
Pretty neat to stand in against Baltimore for your first playoff game.
Yeah, and I don't hold any ill will
sure.
against Baltimore. But
hey.
Yeah, and Baltimore's closest to home, and it's where I got hurt in 23, like, officially ended. So I played at Baltimore at the beginning of the year. Then we went to D.C. at the end of the year. I'm hurt. So I've never really gotten to play at home, and then got to play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people came up, and I'm really appreciative to them. And it was super special to get back in there. Wish I could have done more in the playoffs. So it sucks kind of thinking, you know, if I could have done more, we would have been in a better spot. But I tried. I gave it everything I got.
What does losing in October, how was that fuel different than the 11th round pick, the living out my dream fuel?
Yeah, it's different because there's different expectations in here now. We can call a spade a spade. There was almost no expectations on us last year other than, hey, these young guys, they're still here and mm-hmm. are they going to take that step? And now it's like, yes, we're still technically young guys, but once you get that playoff, like, I don't even know how to say it. Like, it's not stink. Stink wouldn't be the word. But once you get that, like, playoff experience in, like, you have that playoff experience now forever. You hear about veteran guys signing all the time, like, postseason experience. Like, we went into Baltimore and won two games, went up to New York, split, and then they beat us at our place. But we got that experience, and that's going to stay with us. I think it fuels a lot of things. Like, so we got eliminated on October 10th, which coincidentally is my birthday.
Mine too.
Oh, it's your birthday
yeah.
too? Yeah. So we flew home the next morning, booked my flights right after the, like, when we got home from the game, it was like, all right, I can't be here anymore. Like, yeah. It hurts too much. So we went home. Then, like, I was back in the gym that Saturday because it was like, all right, let's go. There was, like, that just taste in my mouth of I want more. I don't watch other teams celebrate on our field just because I don't care about them. But, like, I want to celebrate on our field. We never got that last year. Even when we clinched watching the right. Twins lose, not us winning and putting ourselves in. So I think there were some, like, kind of weird things that happened last year in that regard. It's like we clinched in a different team's clubhouse in Atlanta, and then we won in Baltimore, and then we lost at home. So that stings really bad. Like, Kansas City didn't get to see a playoff win in person last year. So I think that's very motivating for us of just let's go win the division. Let's get a bye. Let's host some games. Let's go do it.
How about what it teaches or what you guys learned last year about the length of the season? You've known it's 162, but I would imagine when you get that October experience, it kind of, I don't know if it lessens the pressure of April, but you understand, man, we still have an opportunity, even with a bad month, wherever that month might fall.
You know, I think you look at Detroit. I mean, they got rolling in August. Yeah. It was, you know, it was over for everybody who played them at that point. I mean, we played them right at the beginning of, like, their kind of streak. It doesn't make April games less important. They're still all very important. I mean, that game we played against Seattle last year ended up being one of our biggest games, where we came back and ended up winning, and we beat them out of the playoffs by one game. So I think what it does is kind of slows up spring training a little bit. A little slower build up. You want to be ready for opening day, but it's not like, I don't want to feel like it's July on opening day.
Right.
I want it to feel like it's, you know, March, April. So I think it's just a slower build of, all right, make sure, like, all right, I know what this full season looks like. I know how to prepare my body. I don't think we'll see anybody go close to 162. Like, I think guys will get off day. Like, I think Bob will have a few off days this year,
right,
whether he likes it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I know he doesn't want them. Nobody wants them. Like, we all get upset when we have off days. But I think we kind of know what October looks like and how stressful it is and how, like, you know, like, there's not a whole lot of movement in lineups once the playoff hits. So I think it's just prepare your body and mind for what that looks like. And obviously, like, you can prepare as good as you want, but if you don't go perform, it's not going to matter how much you prepare.
Yeah.
So got to go perform, go win some games. Like, getting off to a nice start would be great. Doesn't necessarily take any pressure off, but it just kind of solidifies, all right, the work has been done. We're in a really good spot, and we know how good we are.
You mentioned that Seattle game and the comeback, and I remember Bob hit a big triple, mm-hmm, and then gave this glare to the dugout that we on the outside, we don't get to see the fire, mm-hmm, inside Bobby Witt very often. We know he's a nice guy, very polite, mm-hmm, genial, seems like a great teammate, but there's something in there that fuels what is a great player.
Yeah, and you see it come out in the biggest moments, like it, with the White Sox when we were in Chicago when he hit that grand slam. Or his grand slam, right?
And then a couple of defensive moves, yeah.
That's when you see it really come out, and that's where you see with all the great players, like the best players I've ever played any sport, that fire comes out in the biggest moments. He doesn't always show it, like, you know, physically with how he acts or whatever, but there's a switch that flips there when it's time, and we always know when he's up in those situations because it seems like the job gets done, mm-hmm, all the time.
Final thing for you, Vinny Pasquantino, kind enough to give us a few minutes here on 96.5 The Fan. If I eliminate playing baseball and the money that comes with it, what's the best part of being a big leaguer?
I think it's just competing with the best in the world and kind of seeing, like, it's very humbling when you think about it. And you, like you said that about managers, right? There's only 30 managers. There's only 30.
I said 32
base
earlier, but I was,
yeah, I always forget how many NFL teams, because there's so many. Hopefully we have 32 soon.
Yeah, sure.
It's not a prediction or anything, but hey, that'd be great.
Yeah.
There's only 30 first basemen. There's only 30 second basemen. You know, there's 780 big leaguers at any given time. That's, like, ridiculously small number. And the way that, like, I, you know, you could argue easily that the NBA is the hardest to get into because it's the smallest, mm-hmm, roster. But, like, they don't have to go through a minor league system. I know that the G League is there. But, like, there's so many guys that get drafted. And then it's just like, okay, who performs? And if you go in the first round, you're going to get more rope, as you should. And if you go in the 20th round, you're going to get less rope, as you should. But if you go in the 20th round, you can still make it. Lugo went in the
34th
round. Yeah. Like, yeah, there aren't a ton of Seth Lugos out there, but there are some. It's just crazy to think about it when you think about it like that. It's like I'm in this small group, and, like, a lot of the times I think I suck. Like, that's what's really funny is, like, we're in such a small pond that we're always competing with the other best in the world, and you play a game that looks easy on TV, which I fall into that trap too because 99 doesn't look 99 from center field camera. It just simply doesn't. Like, I watch game last year I watched a game. So why is he swinging that? Why is he doing this? And, like, in the playoffs, like, I took multiple fastballs right down the middle for strike three, and I'm sitting there in the box too. Like, wait, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just it's a crazy, like, it's a very unrelatable game too, I think, because it's so skill based. Like, there aren't many major leaguers walking the earth that just, like, picked it up in high school. Like, it's, you're kind of trained your whole life, at least at the skill of doing it. So it's kind of like golf in that regard, where it's like, if you don't start early, like,
right,
it's very hard to, and I'm not saying, by no means am I disrespecting any other sports. Like, I completely understand how hard they are. It's just crazy how different baseball is in terms of, like, all right, I play first base. So there's really only, like, 100 guys in the world that I could talk to about, like, playing major league first base. And if you scale it down even more to, like, left-handers,
right,
now it's like an even smaller group of people that I can even just have a conversation with, of like, hey, what'd you see? It's a very, like, niche, But it's very humbling, like I said, of just like being in this very exclusive club.
I say it so often to callers when they're impressed by fill-in-the-blank recent call-up. I'm like, they're all the best in the world. They all can do something that 99% of people can't. That's why they're getting the opportunity. And when they do it consistently, that's when they become all-stars.
Well, I think about it, too, and I don't want to obviously, I don't want to mention like players' names, but I'm going to. It's like Ryan O'Hearn was like wanted number one in Kansas City for a few years there. Mm-hmm. And it was like when I got called up, like he's on the Orioles, really good team, and he's playing every day because he's a good player. I think it's very underestimated, too. Like the hardest job in baseball, in my opinion, is like the pinch hitter, the guy that comes off the bench, because you're kind of just in limbo all game of, okay, am I getting in the game? Am mm-hmm. I not? All right, I need to warm up. I need to do this. And it's like, oh, hey, it's eighth inning. We need you to go get a bunt down or something. And it's like, yes, you should just go get your job done. But it's not as simple as that always. So it's, you know, he was in that position for a long time here where it's like, hey, you're coming in the ninth to hit off of this closer. Go get him.
Yep.
And he was just getting ripped 24/7. And now he's in a better situation for him. And he's going off. And he's doing a great job. Like, and you know him. He was a great dude. Like, he was awesome.
Terrific.
Would talk to everybody. Yep. Like, was always available.
Always polite.
And I thought he took it pretty well. But, like, that's where the piece of it where it's, like, being an athlete, like, there's a reason we get paid what we do, and that's to handle some of the BS that comes along with it. And fans have every right to say whatever they want. All I ask is that it doesn't get personal. Like, I hate when people bring up my wife's name. Like, you can say whatever you want about me. Say whatever you want. Just like you bring my family up, and now it's like we're crossing a line, which I'd prefer didn't happen. I know it comes with the territory, but you know, I asked for this.
Right.
My wife did not. But I think guys are getting better at handling that stuff with growing up with social media and kind of being in it. I think all in all, it's good for the game because guys are coming up to the big leagues more comfortable with social media and doing interviews. Like I think the group of players that are coming up to the major leagues now is really good with media and content. Not that content matters for us because at the end of the day we got to go perform and play and that's number one, but I think it's good for everybody that guys are more willing than ever to be a part of what's going on online.
I got to get this in just because it's been a kind of a theme of the show this spring is, you know, something I like to stress to the listeners is the amount of sacrifice to get here. I don't know exactly what or where, but it's not just hard work and God-given ability. You had to pass on things that when I was in high school or college I was indulging in.
I missed prom, missed homecoming, stuff like that, but I asked for it. Like I don't want anybody to ever like feel bad because nobody should be able to feel bad for me or for us or whoever. But
most people listening won't sacrifice that even if they say I want to be this, I want to be that.
And you know, there's part of me that wishes I didn't. Like there's life experiences that I missed out on to do this. And some of that, like I'm missing the best man at my wedding is getting married during, like I'm a groomsman at his wedding next year. I can't go. I miss birthdays, stuff like that. But I chose this.
Yeah.
I could have not, and I could have been doing something else. But I had the fortune that I'm good at this, and I had people growing up that helped me get good at this. And so a lot of that, I'm not just playing for me. Like I'm playing for home, for Kansas City, for Richmond, Virginia, where I'm from. Like there's not a whole lot of people from Richmond, Virginia that are playing Major League Baseball right now or playing major sports. Like, I know there's some, but it's not like it's not a hotbed. So I think it's just super important for me to realize, like, I'm so grateful for this. Like, I think I've deserved it. No, that's the wrong thing. I think I've earned it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean I'm not grateful for the opportunity because I very much so am. And I'm very grateful for, like, Cody and Gold for having me on their show every week during the off season. I think that's awesome. Like, for anybody listening at home, like, I don't get paid for that. I just like doing it. And I think it's cool to be a part of a community that I never would have been a part of without this opportunity. So I'm very grateful for Kansas City. I'm very grateful for the fans, for showing up, for supporting us. I'm sorry I don't sign autographs all the time, but I do have things going on that I got to do. And a lot of times I do see that stuff on eBay. So I know you're just getting me to auto it. I got yelled at by an autograph guy yesterday. I signed one for him, but I didn't sign two. So
binder guy?
So I was a prick. No, he was just holding cards. Mm-hmm. I told him I'd sign one, and then I didn't sign two, so he yelled at me.
Sure.
But, yeah, just honestly just very appreciative of what's been given to me in a way. And I try to give back to the fans as much as I can because I am a fan. Like I think it's cool when athletes are try to be in the community in which they live during their season. So
we're all in your corner, Vinny. We're all rooting for you. I really appreciate the time today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vern.
Royals first baseman Vinny Pasquantino, kind enough to join us here on 96.5 The Fan. Text line, in love with the Pasquatch, as you should be. Coming up, We move to the mound as one of the breakout arms of last season. Reliever Sam Long tells his very interesting story. Stay tuned. It's coming up next. Back live from the Valley of the Sun. My name is Josh Vernier, Royals insider for 96.5 The Fan. Every Thursday night, 6 until 7 o'clock, Royals baseball talk right here on your home. For the boys in blue, 2 weeks away from opening day, we'll get you some Chiefs conversation. The great Jay Binkley coming your way in 20 minutes from now. A reminder, the day after opening day, March 28th, Hollywood Casino is the place to be starting at 6 o'clock. Yeah, the day after the opener, which is 2 weeks from today, I'll sit down with Michael Massey and Kyle Isbell for a free event, a question and answer session followed by a meet and greet where the two homegrown Royals will preview the 2025 season, look back on opening day, and tell some stories from the clubhouse. Again, Hollywood Casino, 6 o'clock. The day after opening day, Friday, March 28th. The guy that's going to be standing on that first base line on opening day for the first time as a member of the Kansas City Royals. Pleased to be joined by Royals reliever Sam Long. And before we get to opening day in this 2025 season, I want to go back to the beginning. Were you always, you know, growing up, always into sports, into baseball, or did that come with age?
I always loved playing sports. As you know, as long as I can remember, as far back as I could go, I was, you know, throwing a ball around or swinging a golf club, swinging a bat. My dad was a big time sports fan and played basketball. And I also had I grew up with brothers and sisters that, you know, we loved to play in the backyard and literally whatever sport you could think of, we were playing at one point, but baseball just happened to be kind of what I was best at naturally.
When did the love of the work arrive? Because to get here, it's not just, hey, I'm good at it, so let's be a professional. When did the love lead to what I'm willing to sacrifice to live out this dream?
Yeah, good question. I think for me, the work is what gives me the confidence to go out there and compete. And a lot of the confidence is from that, from putting in the work every day, being focused on my craft. You got to be extraordinary. You got to have an extraordinary work ethic to get here. And especially for me, I feel like I don't naturally throw 100. You know, I wasn't gifted with that. I was gifted with the ability to throw with my left hand. And so to make the most of that is, digging into, you know, what are you willing to sacrifice? You know, stay in instead of going out with your friends and staying out late. And you know, so you just learn to prioritize what's the most important, you know, keep your family close, put the work in, and, you know, it kind of eliminates those distractions. And I think the longer I've been able to play, the more intimate my relationships around me have become, because there's going to be a lot of people that want to be a part of it. And that's awesome. That's great. You know, I love interacting with fans, and a big reason I love doing this is to play in front of fans. And but in my personal life, I keep a small circle, and I think that's, for me, that's been key. You know, keep the distractions down and helps me focus on what I need to do.
Well, you mentioned your father kind of led you to the love of sports, maybe the love of baseball. Paint that picture a little bit more.
He was a competitive basketball player. I mean, competitive with anything he did, really. Okay. As far as sports went, we were always watching a game. He pushed me harder than anybody in my life. There weren't very many weekends where we weren't figuring out, you know, how to get outside and get some work in, whether it was for basketball, baseball, football. Mm-hmm. He was always willing to take that extra step for me to, you know, to prepare me. Always made sure to get the point across that, you know, you might have one or two practices a week and some games on the weekend, but that's not gonna give you the edge over your competitors. That's doing what everyone else is doing.
So were you looking for that edge, or did he introduce you to, here's how to get an edge?
Some days some days it was, you know, it was me asking him, like, what are we gonna go do today, and mm-hmm. can we go hit some extra balls off the tee, or, you know, go do some drills on the mound. But there were definitely a lot of times where he was like, you know, get your butt up, put the video games down and we're going outside. I don't care how hot it is out there, or, you know, so there was plenty of that.
Sure.
But it eliminates regret. You know, there's no chance you're sitting back regretting that you didn't give it a little bit more back then.
Yeah. And, you know, as a kid, you want to play, and that's always your favorite part. But the more we went out there and put that work in, when, you know, if this was the case or not, if kids were not doing as much as I was, it was still giving me that confidence of, like, you know, I've done more,
right,
and I'm ready to go out there and be better than you because I put more work in than you. And that helped me separate myself, you know, going through high school. And that was a huge role that he played, was, you know, introducing the work ethic. And that's something that I think about a lot is, you know, he doesn't, obviously I'm almost 30 years old and I'm in charge of my own career now. It's my complete responsibility. I don't really have anybody forcing me to do anything at this point in my life. So to have those lessons learned early on is something that I'm grateful for, and goes back to what I was saying earlier, like surrounding myself with people that are okay with me sacrificing, you know, a lot of things to be able to do what I do. It's not only my dad, it's everyone I have in my life, my wife, you know. At this point, it's my wife making a ton of the sacrifice, but she knows that I'm doing what I love, and, you know, at this point, she's my number one supporter, and, you know, she's kind of filled that role of, you know, why am I sacrificing? Why am I doing this? It's to better myself and my family, and it's been a really cool dynamic and how things have evolved over the years.
Does she
all because of this game?
No doubt.
You know?
Does she have an athletic background, or did she learn the life of an athlete through you?
She played a little bit of soccer in high school, and mostly cheerleading. But she's always been a natural. Like, we can go out and, you know, go bowling, or and she's always figuring it out pretty quick. Mm-hmm. So she can hang with me on, you know, if we want to go out and do activities. But before we started dating, she didn't really know much about baseball, which made it fun because I was able to kind of teach her, and she was sort of thrown in the fire. We met probably 6 months before I got drafted, and so we really went through the whole process together, the ups and downs, the crazy minor league life, the crazy life we have now. Is it's busy and fun, but she's been along there, you know, every step of the way.
Reminds me of, I mean, just listening last year, talking with James MacArthur about living in his parents-in-law's basement for the first few years of their relationship, having a kid in the basement.
I lived with my in-laws all the way up until last off season. We could have afforded to go and rent a place during the off season, but we were, you know, they did so much for us to keep our schedules clear and, you know, just helping me focus on baseball. And
no doubt.
You know, it takes sacrifice from a lot of other people as well. You know, not only myself. You know, there's a lot of people around me that needed to sacrifice.
Sure. Well, that sacrifice pays off, you know, multiple times throughout your life. But drafted in 2016, big league debut in 2021. What's the toughest moment of those 5 years of riding the buses before you make it to the show?
I think the first couple years initially were the biggest adjustments for me. Learning what it meant to be a professional, learning what it meant to have baseball as my number one priority. Yeah, it's a little bit different when you're going to school and you have your homework and you're a student athlete. You know, they always say student athlete, student comes first before athlete. And once I got drafted, I got there. It was all athlete at that point. So recognizing what that actually meant was a little bit of an adjustment. It took me a little bit. I mean, honestly, it took me getting released to understand it. At one point, moving on from baseball during that year, going back to school, it took about 6 or 7 months to realize, like, what I could have done different. I wouldn't change that for anything at this point, because it taught me, it gave me that perspective of the game not being that priority and not really being a part of my life really at all. From a playing standpoint, I was still coaching and giving lessons and things like that, but it just gave me that perspective of what do I need to do differently to make this better the second time around. I guess my second chapter of my professional baseball career.
Well, what are the voices in your head during all that as far as, you know, I mean, everyone has doubt regardless of the profession, let alone a game that's steeped in failure. When you step away, is that because the, you know, how loud is the doubt and how loud is the, man, you still got it. You still got something.
The still got it side of it started coming in a little later. When I was released, I was pretty down, and I was pretty, I was pretty set on, you know, not being good enough to be a big leaguer. And I recognized that over time, it wasn't because I wasn't good enough. It was more about how I was going about my business and how I was going about my work. I knew what I needed to adjust. For me, the big adjustment was just the preparation of, you know, putting the plan together of how I'm going to make this happen. How am I going to improve?
Was that more physical, more mental?
Everything. I needed to get mentally stronger. I needed to physically put on more muscle. When I got released, I was 25 pounds lighter than I am now. And so after putting that weight on, I noticed that, you know, I'd be able to get it up to 93, 94 occasionally before, but that was, you know, once every 4 or 5 outings. And once I put that weight on, it came back. It was, you know, the velocity was becoming more consistent. And so that was one thing I recognized, was keeping strength up during the season. Doing a ton of training in the off season is key. That was a huge step in my career, was once I started taking my off seasons very seriously, is when I started reaping those rewards during the season. Well, on the mental side, I think the confidence, you know, the ability to turn the page.
But with that, okay, you can learn that to get back in the game, to start rising through the ranks, and then having a bad show one game in the big leagues, man, you can say I'm ready to turn the page, but I got to imagine, you know, I've heard you're not really a big leaguer till you stand there naked in front of 30,000. Nobody knows that better than a pitcher.
Right. Yeah, you don't. You can prepare for it your whole life. You don't know what it means until you're on that mound. You could do everything in your power to feel like you're prepared, and I think that's why in baseball experience is so valuable. And learning, you're learning something after every outing.
Right. Take me back to last offseason. I know you had other options other than Kansas City. Describe to the fans what set the Royals, other than an opportunity, what about their presentation, their coaching staff, their pitching department, what intrigued you?
For me, they did a great job of letting me know what they were expecting out of me coming in. They saw that I've had success in the past, and they've seen where my struggles were, and they kind of laid out a plan of, you know, how am I going to get back to that guy where I'm consistently having success in the major leagues. And so they laid that plan out, and they pretty much said, we want you to get back to where you were in 21, 22 with San Francisco, and this is how we see you making that possible. That was the most input I got from any team, and I love a plan. I love the communication that, you know, really over the course of the last year, the communication has been awesome.
Safe to say, and you're better than the guy you were with San Francisco. Yep. Experience and just ability, stuff, execution, command.
Kind of all coming together.
So what's the next step look like? What do you hope 2025 holds for you?
I want to continue to improve. You know, I want to find ways to get better and build on last year. That was a big step in my career, a big confidence booster, a lot of high leverage innings, a taste of the postseason. We have a few things up our sleeves with how I want to attack some hitters this year. We think we have a really good plan put together to go out and be better than I was last year. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about being back in Kansas City.
Tell me about those postseason mounds, Camden, Kauffman, and the Bronx. I mean, boy, what an intro to October you guys got.
Yeah. I remember walking down the cobblestone in Baltimore. Just insane environment. You go on the road in the postseason, it's rowdy, it's loud, every pitch. That's the biggest difference I noticed, was like there's a reaction after every single pitch. To go in front of the fans in Kansas City, and kind of, I've watched plenty of videos the months leading up to the postseason I like to watch a lot of those YouTube videos of the 14-15 teams, you know, just trying to get a feel for what that was like and to, you know, experience that firsthand. Unreal. I want that again. I want that feeling back. I just want that experience. I want to go further. And I just think it's possible with this group. Everyone believes that. So, yeah.
No doubt. Well, after what you guys did last year, those type of games, atmospheres at Kauffman Stadium are going to be happening a lot more. If 14 and 15 are any indication, the year after is when you see that big old spike of attendance. Yeah, and there's nothing like Kansas City with a good baseball team. I know that football squad's been dominating for a while, but baseball's just different, as you well know. Yeah, Sam, I really appreciate that. The time, man. Very generous with it, and best of luck this season.
Cool. Thank you. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Royals reliever Sam Long, kind enough to join us here on 96.5 The Fan. Thanks to Sam. Thanks to Vinny Pasquantino for the time. Thanks to Jacob Mustard back at the studio for his hard work. And stay tuned, because that football team I just mentioned, that dynastic football team, right back at it. Jay Binkley with all the latest, not only with what's going on with the team, but who's next to join the team. Nobody, when you hear their voice, elicits more Chiefs memories than the great Jay Binkley. Stay tuned. He's coming up next. I'll talk to you next Thursday at 6 on 96.5 The Fan. Take care.